Good evening and welcome to As the Worm Turns. You are tuned in to KVNF's live call-in gardening show. I'm your host, Jill Spears. Tonight I'm here with, of course, our fabulous regular worms. It's Lance and Lulu. Good evening.
Good evening.
Hi, everybody.
And the clown worm in the house.
I just had to start it off. I'm sorry. It just came out. It's Wynn Clearwater from Clearwater Design. Yeah.
It's a real setup there, Spears.
You know.
I'll take it.
Okay.
I've earned it.
Yeah.
Well, thanks a lot, you guys, for letting me on the show.
Well, sure. you're kind of family, you know.
You know how much I love to talk. Yeah. I mean, about gardening and stuff.
Well, right.
Here we go.
We love it. No, it's great to have a different. It's good. It makes it
was,
more exciting.
It was fun when I ran into you last week on the sidewalk, and you and I just started talking about plants and stuff. We just can't help it. As soon as I see Lulu, it's like, that's all we talk about.
Hey, what have you been doing? What's going on at your house? I don't know what's going on. You want some plants?
Yeah,
I got some plants. Oh, yeah, let's get some
plants. Let's do this on the radio. Cool.
That happens a lot to Lance and I too when we're sitting
when you're out and about.
Yeah, totally. Mm-hmm. I just don't see this guy very often.
No,
so.
He's like the phantom. You know, you see the truck and you go,
the store
okay,
that has cookies
somewhere.
Is where you're gonna find
right,
him.
Right, yeah, exactly. Well, I wave to him because we pass each other on the road a lot, you know, because we're almost
right
neighbors
up there,
really,
yeah.
You know, we're down valley, so. But, hey, I just want to say thank goodness for the rain. You know, I just want to call that out because this is a gardening show, and that's so important right now.
Yeah, we're going to talk about water today.
It's a good thing to talk about.
I'm going to give the phone numbers, and then we can get that conversation going. So you can join in 527-4868 or 1-866-KVNF. Now, you can email to worm@kvnf.org. So, Wynn, do you have a landscaping, permaculture, design business?
Yes.
And water slash hobby.
slash lifestyle. Because it
there
is.
There you go. Yeah. There you go. So, and water's a big part of that.
It really is. You know, and this year has been just a really great opportunity. Well, it's been a good opportunity, mm-hmm. you know, mm-hmm. and I have a tendency to think that we oftentimes as humans take water for granted. So to be.
You think?
Yeah, right. I know. And I'm not going to get too soapboxy, but I at the same. Yeah, I know, right?
Yeah, right.
So at the same time, I really, as a permaculturalist, I always, we like to look at the world as opportunities and lessons. And this year has been a really great opportunity to start employing some more water-wise gardening techniques and just ways to capture water and hold mm-hmm. water in the soil. You know, so it's actually, it's a little bit of a wake-up call. And it's also, well, we can hope that we get back to kind of a normal cycle of moisture around here. But at the same time, even if we do, it doesn't mean that we shouldn't be conscious. We live in the desert.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Right. And, you know, what's normal when you live in a desert
right,
anyway?
Right, exactly. And you know, this will be a trend either way. I mean, there's a lot of talk. I was reading High Country News, and their last issue that came out was a lot about the drying up, the aridification, I think they called it, of the
sure.
West that's happening, you know. And so, yeah, but doesn't mean that we don't have water. It just means that I think we should be more respectful of the water and more wise in how we utilize it and how we capture it and you know.
Well, the other thing, too, is that it's being spread out among many, many, many more people than it ever was.
That's very true.
Mm-hmm. And more users than ever.
There's more users than ever. And all you have to do is fly around in an airplane from any one big metropolitan area to another.
Yeah.
Or fly over Arizona and, you know, Phoenix or fly over any of that stuff. And it's mind-boggling.
Oh, yeah. You know, this is something on my mind is we've actually stopped the water cycle with all the dams and
good
reservoirs
sure.
and diversions. The water isn't going, like the water here should go to the Sierra Cortez.
Right.
And it doesn't.
It doesn't.
You know, so we've actually stopped the water cycle. Mm-hmm.
Well, it's interesting because I was thinking about that the other day when I was driving home about how much we've disrupted both the hydrological cycle and the carbon cycle on the planet.
Mm-hmm.
We're kind of less water in a way because of the way even with things like fracking, we're pumping water deep into the ground and it's actually taking it out of the surface hydrological cycle. And then with the carbon, we're putting so much more into the atmosphere that we're creating this accelerated carbon cycle. And these are the two most profound cycles that create life on the planet.
Right. I mean, so our archaeologists and geologists million years from now going to go, wow, look at this, when they're carbon dating things.
Yeah.
And whoa, look at this. This is
massive amount of carbon.
Whoa.
Yeah, because it's interesting. We're pulling it from so deep into the earth where it's kind of stored in a way. That carbon is stored down there, and we're bringing it to the surface and releasing it. And then the water, we're putting that deep into the earth where it's being stored in a way too. And eventually it'll, maybe a million years, it'll
find
its balance again.
Right. It doesn't go away.
Right.
I mean, it just changes its form.
Exactly. And the earth is constantly striving to seek a balance in there somehow.
Yeah.
So, but anyway, we do have a little water.
A little bit of water.
It's coming out of the sky right now.
I know. That's feeling
for
great.
Free.
I have
for
a couple shrubs in my back of my truck I set up before I came in here so that they could get watered.
So what are you seeing? What are you doing with the landscape permaculture stuff?
Well, today, actually, we planted a great little edible landscape for a lady with a bunch of natives, the yellow flowering currant. Mm-hmm. We did service berry. We did western sand cherry. And I did a hawthorn. And along her driveway, she wanted a hedge. So we put in the yellow flowering currants and we dug a swale so that the water from the driveway will run right into the swale.
Nice.
And then we put the currants in there.
So
I was the guy who was working with me today is a young permaculture guy. And I was like, look, and it started to rain right when we were done watering. I said, look, we don't even have to water those currants. It just the driveway watered.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a great way to capture it because before we started, the soil was actually higher than the concrete. So, of course, the water would run over to the soil, and then it would run down into the road and then be washed into the river, which is totally fine as well. But, as a permaculturist, we oftentimes think about the soil as the best place to store the water.
Mm-hmm.
And so to do that, we also want to incorporate more organic matter because the organic matter is what actually helps to hold the moisture in. We have such a heavy clay soil here that, it's baked right now. It's a concrete.
Mm-hmm.
So even when it does rain, a lot of that moisture just runs off.
It runs into those cracks and disappears forever.
Forever. Until a plant sucks it up. So swales are a really useful tool. And if we are on a hillside, which a lot of us are, maybe not so much in town, but a lot of us are on hillsides, it's really good to do those swales. And with permaculture, we do what's called key line swales, which follows the contour line. And you collect all that moisture that runs across the surface of the hard compacted clay soil and is collected into a little swale, and it gives it an opportunity to percolate down into the ground.
Yeah, just for terminology, some people might not know what a swale is.
Okay, a swale is like a ditch, basically.
A ditch.
Yeah,
okay.
A gentle ditch. Mm-hmm. And we take the soil from the ground and dig the swale, and we throw it on the downhill side of that swale and create a little bit of a berm, which is the opposite of a swale. It's a little mound of soil.
Okay.
And that helps to catch the water.
Catch the water, slow it down, and it gets a soak in.
Exactly.
And there's places that it's thousands of years old that they've been doing that.
It's amazing. Oh. Mesa Verde.
Yeah.
They've
got
check dams and swales all over Mesa Verde that the Anasazi, actually, that's how they cultivated.
Mm-hmm.
If you ever get a chance to go down there, I learned so much when I went down there. I was like, wow, this is amazing. They had reservoirs and swales and all kinds of irrigation ditches. And they would actually cultivate in these little arroyos. They built check dams, which are just basically piles of rock to slow the moisture down. And on the uphill side of those check dams, organic matter would collect as well. So sticks and leaves and things would pile up. Right. So you're building the soil. So the beautiful thing about the swales is that they're self-mulching. In the wintertime or in the fall when the leaves all fall, they all fill up with leaves and sticks and whatever else falls out of the tree. And then they get collected and So as permaculturalists, we're kind of lazy people. We like to just hang out in the hammock and watch the garden grow. So if we let nature do the watering and the mulching for us, we've got a lot more time.
Yeah.
And that's something anybody can really do, just looking at the contours of your garden and figuring out where that water runs and where
Absolutely.
It can collect. Mm-hmm. Make yourself.
And anytime I plant everything in a little basin. I put my trees in little basins. So I put them below the surface of the soil just a little bit. Not so much that they're going to get covered with a lot of soil, but just enough to catch the water. And once again, you also catch those leaves that create this beautiful little mulch. I've got these big cottonwoods just to the south of my garden. So when the wind comes in the fall and blows all those leaves down, all those swales and these little pockets around my trees all get filled with leaves, and then they're mulched. It's fantastic.
Yeah. Well, Lulu and I have always mentioned we don't rake leaves.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, no, never.
You know, just leave them there.
And right.
There's a spot in my garden underneath one of the rhubarb plant where the leaves are still there from last
year. Right. Isn't that great?
It's phenomenal.
Yeah.
You can still see where
they,
you know, I mean, they're almost gone, but.
Yeah. And I go one step beyond even, because I do like to get out there with my pruners, you know, and I shear back my perennials, and I just lay them right there at the base of the perennial themselves. You know, my lavender, I kind of pull the bottom branches, and I stuff the lavender that I've trimmed right up underneath of there, and it creates a nice little mulch.
Yeah, yeah.
And the stuff came from that soil, so you're not taking it away.
Exactly. And the lavender knows what the lavender needs, so why not give back to the lavender itself? Because it's accumulated what it wants.
Yeah.
And I plant comfrey everywhere because it's just it's the greatest garden plant for it's a dynamic accumulator, which means it has big tap roots that go deep in the earth, and it brings nutrients up from minerals deep in the earth and deposits it in an organic matter on the surface of the soil that makes it available for other plants. And it flowers twice a year. Mm-hmm. It's a great bee plant, and it just and it's self-mulching. It's so cool, right? Because it flowers and then it just falls to the ground.
Not only is it self-mulching, but it creates a space around itself.
Yeah.
Because the leaves are so dense.
Yeah.
They fall down, and I personally take my comfrey and compost it.
Right.
Because, you know, I want other flowers to be able to come in and
be
up there next to it. But it's an amazing plant.
It's so great.
It's so phenomenal.
Yeah. If you don't have comfrey in your garden, you should.
I don't know how you cannot have it, because it's everywhere.
And once it gets in your garden, it's there forever. You're never going to get rid of it.
No. Well, I've actually gotten some of it to move around.
Right.
But
right.
Yeah. You want it there.
You do.
Yeah,
you do.
It's good
beautiful.
Stuff. Yeah.
So I actually created a little dynamic accumulator. I'm actually working on it now. A row on the outside of my hedgerow. So my garden has a big hedgerow around it that's edibles, Nanking cherries and elderberries and roses and things. And so on the outside by my compost, I have yarrow and nettles and comfrey and big things like that growing that I can then just chop and throw those in the compost and build.
Yeah.
In the garden ones, I just pretend like I'm a grazing cow or, you know, because we don't have that anymore. And I get out there and I just stomp on my comfrey and just knock it to the ground when it's ready. You know? So because grazing animals are such an essential part of every ecosystem. And of course, here in the West, we don't really have that natural flow of grazing animals the way that, you know, would
we
have been 150
to.
Years
mm-hmm.
out here.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
They're really important, actually. And that's another thing about water. You know, the cows actually put those little hoof prints into the ground, and that collects water.
Water and seeds get in there. And
exactly. And organic matter.
Yeah.
And it's like a little mini garden, you know.
Right.
It's pretty neat.
You know, just think about that. When the buffalo herds used to run across the prairie.
Incredible.
Amazing machinery just.
Yeah.
Yeah, right.
Composting machines.
Yeah.
They were like giant tractors in a way. You
well,
know?
Yeah.
Dispersing seeds, manuring the fields, creating little pockets to collect the seeds, the moisture, and the organic matter. And grazing animals can be really great if we utilize them in the way that they naturally would be used, which is large herds for short periods of time over large areas. It's when we get a high concentration of them in the same area over a long period
of
time.
Yeah.
That's when we get the invasive weeds. And I know you guys are probably on the same page as I am about invasive weeds.
Yeah.
which is that they're actually healing the earth.
Yeah.
You know? All right. Well, let's talk about that. I'm going to give the phone numbers because talking about a lot of good stuff. So 527-4868-1866 KVNF. Now, there are times, Wind, when I'm pulling a weed and I'm wondering.
You think about me, don't
yes,
you?
Because
I put your yard in. You didn't tell me there'd be so much bindweed in my backyard.
That's been remedied, and it's a beautiful yard, by the way. But it's that thing of healing the earth
yeah.
and keeping the soil intact and
right.
your theory on that. Let's talk about that.
Well, it's interesting because a woman just asked me about that today. She goes, well, I just don't understand bindweed and what the purpose of it is. And I said, well, you know, it's actually great for covering the earth quickly. It grows anywhere. It creates a mat of ground cover, which helps keep erosion down. And the network of roots underneath actually helps bind the soil together.
Mm-hmm.
So,
and it's also bringing up deep rooted minerals
yeah.
from down below.
It's another dynamic accumulator,
yeah.
right?
Yeah.
So, and you could say that about a lot of these. Knapweed is a great one.
Mm-hmm.
And thistle is another great one. And, both those two are great, pollinator plants as well. Mm-hmm. And as well as the white top, you know, and it's tough to talk about noxious weeds without touching some nerves, because there is a campaign about spraying weeds and we need to knock these weeds mm-hmm. back. In my opinion, they're going to be natives. We might as well call them natives
you
at this point.
You might as well accept
right.
it. Yeah.
Because yeah. we are not getting rid of knapweed, thistle, bindweed, white top. We're just not going to get rid of them.
No.
I don't care how much you spray. They're not going away at this point. They're here to stay.
Well, then some of the stuff that is, you know, under control all the time that's so beneficial, like milkweed.
Right.
You know, boy, it just breaks my heart to hear people saying, yeah, yeah, no milkweed, spray it away.
I know.
You know, because that's the only plant that a monarch butterfly will lay its eggs on.
It's beautiful, too.
And it's garbage.
And you
and
can
it's
eat
edible.
It.
It's,
yeah.
And
my
it's
son
edible.
Just fried up some milkweed pods when they were just fresh,
yeah.
you know. Oh.
Or in the spring, you can use it as
like
asparagus.
Cheesy. Right.
Uh-huh. And mm-hmm. it's Asclepias, right?
It's what?
Asclepias?
The genus?
Yeah, isn't
Asclepsia?
It?
Asclepsia? Yeah.
Yeah,
Asclepsia.
Yeah.
And I actually have the tuberosa growing in my garden, which is pleurisy root. So it's also, and that one's totally different than the other. There's actually like 150
varieties.
There's
so many,
yeah.
There's,
I mean,
there's broad leaves and skinny
yeah.
leaves.
And they don't
wow.
even look similar. It's amazing. You know, like, because the tuberosa looks totally different. What's the species on the one here? I don't know either.
I was looking at the Western weed book today before I came in.
Yeah.
That's
all. They're all Asclepsia, though.
Asclepsia.
And,
I always said Asclepsia.
You know, I actually, you know, a tip of the hat to NPR. They just did a little thing on the monarchs and how important it is to plant the milkweed. So at least the word's getting out a little.
Yeah, it is. And that'll help. And like you're saying, some of it's beautiful and ornamental.
Oh yeah.
You know, the that orange,
the
tuberosa.
Isn't it vibrant?
Yeah, mm-hmm.
It's fantastic.
Gorgeous. And again, you know, totally, you can't destroy it.
No.
Yeah.
yeah.
So happy.
Yeah.
I've saw a lot of monarchs this summer. I've been pleasantly surprised.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I've got milkweed and echinacea. It's my monarch garden. And because they love the
go.
Echinacea, too.
Yeah.
Oh, how beautiful is that? A monarch on top of a purple cone.
Oh, come on.
I know. It just brings a tear to the eye, doesn't it?
Yeah. Glass eyeball.
Hey. We have a caller from Peonia.
From Peony.
On the line. Good evening, caller.
Yeah, you have a caller from Peony.
Yeah, nice.
What's going on?
You guys are beautiful. I got to give you props. I love your show. Everything goes well for you. You guys put out a lot of really good old love and a lot of good old Mother Earth type stuff. I really like the way you guys do your thing. All the stuff that you guys are talking about is great because if we work in this area with natural, true native plants, we supply the natural, true native area with what it needs. And all it does is all come back to itself. And so it's so great to hear you guys talking about this stuff. So thank you so much. I'm just giving you high fives.
Awesome. Hey, thanks. We appreciate that.
Thanks a lot for thinking about the way that it really, truly works. Because a lot of people don't understand that Paeonia, about 800, 1,000 years ago, this was a riverbed. No one understands that this town was a full, huge river. So there's a lot of things to understand about how this soil came about, which is very, very beautiful. And the soil really is the truth. And when you find the soil, you can't exploit it. When you start overworking it and doing things, you destroy it. So you got to find out what it wants, which is, you guys do a really good job. So thank you so much.
Thanks. Thanks for calling. Thanks for listening.
That's a really good point. Figuring out what it wants.
Yeah.
Figuring out what it is, because you have different exposures. You have rockier soil. You have sandier soil. Figure out.
Right.
Figure it out.
And Wind, in your permaculture profession, do you really amend soil, or do you just work with what's there and pick the right plants to go with it? And
yeah, I'm actually not a big proponent of amending soil. Mm-hmm. I'm a proponent of building soil, and that takes time. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of concept in just getting soil tests and adding a bunch of stuff. I believe in composting and adding compost, organic matter.
Yeah.
Because then the microbials do the work. Mm-hmm. It's, once again, as a permaculturalist, I don't want to work a lot. I don't want to import a bunch of things from all the way around the world and have a huge carbon footprint and amending soil. And I also don't want to necessarily get out there and do a whole lot of work. So I let the worms, I let the nematodes and the bacteria and the fungi do the work that nature intended them to do, which is build soil. It's a patient process, as any gardener knows.
Right.
If you rush it, then you actually can do more detriment. It's like anything. When we're in a healing process, which the entire earth is, every square centimeter of soil on this planet is in a healing process, in my opinion. We have to take our time with that, and we have to also key into what it needs. And the plants tell us what the soil needs. And when we recognize that and we observe that, then we can come in and do the right thing for them. And that's unique to each site. There's not a broad statement that you can say, oh, okay, you can just do this thing.
No.
You know? It takes time. It really does.
Yeah. And I was just thinking, it's unique to each site, but it's unique to each person.
It's true. Mm-hmm. It's true.
We all have different ways to do it.
Absolutely. And no one's way is right or wrong.
No two gardens are alike.
Exactly.
Yeah. If that are being gardened, if you have the same
person
doing your work, like you or someone, then it's going to look similar.
Yeah.
But no two gardens are alike.
You know,
I love that.
The time that I amend the soil the most, ironically, and in my business I end up doing this, is when I put down sod, when I put down grass.
Right.
It's the heaviest feeder. It's the gnarliest weed. It's, it takes the most work. And Lance knows, because he does landscape work too. And it's like, I put in a yellow flowering currant. No, I just stick it right in the ground, you know, and break up the soil and give it a little head start. But
I don't amend soil.
Yeah, I'm with you. We just plant it proper, make sure the water gets in there. And, you know, to be honest, clay soil, which is what we have all around here, is actually highly fertile soil. The hardest part is generally when I'm working in a neighborhood that have relatively new houses and they've dug down and the subsoil has become the topsoil, or the topsoil is under the subsoil. Mm-hmm. And then you have this manco shale that's just packed down and it's so intense. And once again, then you have to plant appropriately, you have to plant intelligently, and you have to also water properly, which basically means deep watering infrequently. You've got to allow the soil to dry out, because air is equally as important as water is in the soil.
Mm-hmm.
There tends to be an overwatering, ironically.
Sure. Not
so much in
town.
And then
it gets compacted, and then you lose all your microorganisms and your whole...
And the roots can't breathe.
Nothing,
And
it
you
goes
get
sour.
That, Lambourne Mesa, you probably know this because you probably dug all over the valley like I have, but this side, Lambourne Mesa, and the south side of the valley is just wicked clay. Just wicked. And the north side is a lot of rock, which is actually better. It's clay, but it's actually better in a way, because at least there's pockets.
And it drains.
And it drains. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, you know, if you're on that south side of this valley, North Fork Valley, you're going to be dealing with probably not a whole lot of rocks unless you're down in a low spot where water ran at one point. But if you're up on the mesa, it can be really intense.
Yeah, just and just one thing I wanted to say is no time frame.
Right.
Don't
put a time frame on building
soil. Just,
yeah.
Patience
yeah.
is a virtue.
No time frame.
Right.
Mm-hmm. I had no time frame of doing what I was doing. I just kept on doing it.
Right. And some spots will build quicker than others.
Yeah.
And you just got to key into that. And to me, gardening is a life journey. And it's not something that can be quantified in a single season. And goodness knows it can't be quantified in this past season because probably most people struggled.
Yeah.
I'm sure even Lance and Lulu struggled. I know I did.
Yeah.
Just because, you know, the ground is so dry everywhere. I can feel the earth sucking the water away. So even if you water, there's this hugely dry pocket not far away that's just going, I want that.
I had dry spots in my garden that I've never had before.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And it's like, where did this come from?
Right. Mm-hmm. Exactly.
You know, it's not even on the edges. It's in the middle.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know.
Yeah. Yeah. I have that in my lawn in one spot where it just, I can't keep it wet.
Right.
You know, but.
So don't be discouraged.
And, you know, and just go with it.
Yeah.
And not be too freaked out. But that was why I kept my watering going pretty regularly right up until the ditch was turned off. Because I knew, especially coming late in the season like it did, that when finally there was no moss, you're storing that water deep down.
Yeah.
And you don't need it anymore on the surface to keep little seedlings and things alive.
Mm-hmm.
You can just cache it and just, you know, kind of give it up. I mean, I watched the comfrey. We're talking about comfrey. Oh, my God. On the garden that's right near the road there.
Yeah.
Oh, man. Even the yarrow was wilting and just awful. And I thought, you know what? Good on you.
Yeah.
You know, do your thing.
It's like any stress, it makes them stronger.
Yeah.
And makes them more drought tolerant.
Yeah.
They will seek deeper reservoirs of water. And that's how we get things more drought tolerant here. So just a quick word on that is, you know, I always encourage people to thoroughly soak everything and then let it totally bone dry out, especially when you're planting new things. And that's part of the creating that little basin. When you plant a tree and you create a little basin, you fill that basin up and it might have, you know, 5 or 6 inches of water in there. And it might take 45 minutes to percolate down before you get rid of all the puddles in there. But that water is penetrating deep into the ground. And then it's encouraging those roots to go down because as the surface dries out, which is what dries out first, the lower part still stays moist and the roots will go down deeper. And if we're always just watering the surface, then the roots never seek. And that's another thing about not amending is that if we amend the soil, especially when we're doing new plantings, we tend to create a clay pot, literally a terracotta pot.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And then
the roots don't go anywhere.
They never go anywhere. It looks great for a year. And then in 2 years, you're like, why'd that die?
Yeah. Right.
You know?
Whoops.
Yeah.
I was at the seed workshop in April down here that we had. And this one guy was talking, and he mentioned planting a field of corn. And only 5 plants survived. It was a drought year. That's a success because you have plants that have adapted to the
save
dry,
those seeds.
Save the seeds off of those
That's
plants.
Drought tolerant corn.
Yeah, you know, or whatever it was. Right. You know, you had those few plants, and that's what you wanted to keep for the seed.
Yeah, yeah.
You know,
totally. And I saw a lot of corn fields actually down in the adobes where they do a lot of commercial corn growing, but even around the fringes, you tend to get smaller plants anyway because it's drier for that reason, that the dry area that's not being irrigated, it's literally sucking the water away from those edges. But those edges were deeper this year. You know, you'd see it, you'd see like
when
6 to 10 feet deep into the field instead of just that 2 rows
two
out.
Feet, yeah.
Yeah, you know. And it's literally because the winter, we did not have that and we didn't have the runoff because we have to think about water in a way that it doesn't, it's not just surface water. It's the underground water too, because we're literally living on water. You know, there's a big basin of water under the ground where we're living that comes down off the mountains. And when that basin doesn't get recharged, that water table drops. And we'll see springs drying up. We'll see creeks getting smaller. We'll see the river getting lower. And that's because this basin of water that holds all of that water up is getting lower and lower into the ground.
Yeah. And you have a dry winter. You don't have a recharge.
Exactly. Right. And that's what happened this year. So, you know, we can actually do okay with these 95-degree days if we get that recharge in the ground. Mm-hmm. And that's what hung us up this year. Yeah. So hang in there, everybody.
Yep.
Keep gardening. And do polycultures and mulch and organic matter and all that stuff. And plant in swales and trap water and, and plant next to your downspouts and things
like
that.
Yeah, plant dense.
What's polyculture?
Polyculture is when you incorporate lots of different species into a small area. Monocropping is just by nature going to deplete the soil. It's going to deplete the moisture. It leaves way too much bare soil, which is the bane of moisture of plants in general.
Yeah. I had a small garden tour today, and people say, what are those flowers for? What? And calendulas and marigolds.
Right.
And I says, the more diversity, the better.
Exactly.
You know, it doesn't matter whether they're good or bad.
Right. It does, yeah, exactly.
You know.
Yeah, let the purslane go.
Yeah.
Purslane's a great one.
Yeah.
That'll grow on anything, and it's a great ground cover.
Yeah.
I grow white Dutch clover in all of the paths in my garden, and so you've got this beautiful bee fodder. You're fixing nitrogen because I like to mow it when it's kind of flowering. I let the bees kind of get it for a while, and then you mow it. Releases a lot of nitrogen, and then you've got a nice mulch. Sometimes I'll chop it back and throw it up into the garden beds even. So, you know, in permaculture, we try to stack functions in what we're doing in the garden so that we can maximize our energy efficiency, whether it be with our water energy, our physical energy, our sun energy, or whatever. So we create these polycultural forest gardens that basically assimilate the way that the forest grows. And if you go into any forest, you see a lot of diversity. Things are growing on the ground. There's upright perennials. There's annuals. There's shrubs. There's an understory of trees. And then there's an overstory as well. And all of these things are working together. They serve different purposes. So, and then another thing would be to really encourage the fungal growth in your garden, because the fungus are like sponge. The hyphae are like sponge.
Do you, when you start a new landscape, do you inoculate? Do you help bring some of that kind of fungal stuff? Like the place where there's subsoil, it's now the topsoil.
Yeah, you know, I try to. I don't always. What I've been doing lately is actually I've been buying compost from Soil Not Dirt out in Crawford. He makes beautiful stuff. And there's definitely a lot of bacteria. And there's probably not as much mycorrhizae as I'd like. But, you know, I bring that in as a lot of microbial activity.
Yeah.
And at least, you know, I just bring that in, make berms, whatever, and just kind of add it just to get some life into it, especially in areas like that.
Yeah,
that are,
just to start it. I've helped people out.
To jumpstart it a little.
I've brought them some soil from the garden or some compost or a mix.
Right.
You know, new gardens.
Exactly.
I have some friends at down on Olathe that took a hilltop off, so you can imagine what that was. And nothing was growing, and I said, here.
Yeah,
we're going to do this.
Little starter.
Yeah.
Yeah, sometimes you do have to jumpstart. And once again, that's the uniqueness of each site. You know, and that's why I say I don't necessarily amend a lot of things, but there's spots where, you know, you've got to give it a little love.
Yeah,
there's nothing living there, you know. You got to get a little something living. So that's kind of the...
And then move it around.
Yeah.
You know, I
and
mean, you're talking about making a clay pot.
Yeah.
Well, if you are going to have a permanent plant in a spot, again, you're going to encourage the root growth. You're going to still have it, hopefully, laying down its own parts, body parts, when it's done with them in the fall, and breaking that clay pot up. But then sometimes you just need a little help.
Yeah.
You know, go in there and use a broad fork and just loosen it up.
I love the broad fork.
Yeah, yeah.
It's great. And you don't even have to totally turn the soil with that. You can just open it.
Just open it.
Right.
Yeah.
And get the stuff to
let it breathe and let it get in there.
Yeah.
Yeah. And chickens.
And chickens.
They really work.
There's a whole
snakes
other
and lizards
show.
And skinks.
Right.
Yeah. All the little critters.
Toads.
Yeah, they're so helpful. Little workers.
Little guys.
Great conversation, Wind. Yeah. Thank you so much for coming in.
Yeah, and thanks for
sharing all the good knowledge with everybody.
Yeah, and you guys too.
Well,
I always learn something just hanging out with you guys.
Well, that's what it's really all about, right?
It is. I know. Great.
Right?
It's
that's
so
why
true.
This program does what it does.
I know.
It just helps people get it, you know, get on.
Get inspired.
Keep going.
Totally. Well, and
whatever you do, don't stop.
I just want to give you guys props because I've learned so much from the two of you since I've lived here for a couple decades of just like gardening. And Lance has shared so much with me just about.
He's amazing.
Well, and he and I have the same mentality about how we operate. I'm a little more wild. He's a little bit more. He's seen my garden.
Organized.
I've seen his. It's a little more.
I'll show you. You.
Yeah, well, thanks to all of you for sharing your information and all of our listeners, too, that call.
Yeah, that call and ask such fabulous questions.
Are listening. And keep growing.
Yeah. Keep it up, everybody.
All right. We'll be back next week, same time, next Tuesday, and it's One Woman's Perspective
thanks
coming
so
up
lot,
next.
You guys.
Thanks
Thank
for
you.
Listening,
Kamina.
Yeah.
Good night,
enjoy
everybody.
The rain.
Yeah.